Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Tell me, how are you doing this fine, beautiful Sunday morning, Adam?
Wa alaikum salam, Shafaad. Thanks for that lovely introduction. As you know, sailors and fishermen are very giving people. They're always sharing their knowledge, sharing their experiences, taking people on trips. So let me share with you this morning's conditions at sea, Shafaad. The sea is very bumpy today. I haven't seen any boats go out the harbor this morning. I think all the sailors and fishermen are taking a break and maybe holding their partners' hands and walking the malls today, Shafaad. So the wind was really strong yesterday. Forecast was up to 30 knots. But I saw a report from one of the harbor masters that it was blowing up to 45 knots out at sea yesterday evening. So the port was closed for a short while. I see the lights are working again and the ports reopened. And on the beach front, most of the bathing beaches are open. There's crowds in the water, so hopefully the water quality has improved. And everyone's enjoying the promenade, Shafaad. I see cyclists, I see couples with babies in their prams, and the people walking and jogging and cycling and really enjoying the summer morning, Shafaad.
Now, besides there being an old motion in the ocean, there is a motion on the seashores. The promenade, the people going up and down, cycling, breathing in, having that lovely air, and E. coli. I hope I'm not lying, but I'm reading the Sunday newspapers. Everything is a E. coli, E. coli. Are they lying, or does E. coli is going to lie? And if you walk, if you've got at least feet or foot, they'll get into you, Adam. Talk to me.
Yes, Shafaad, Joburg is known as a city of gold, Egoli, and I think Durban is becoming known as city of something else, E. coli.
What analogy. I tell you, you are a genius. Go ahead. That gold.
But I'm always positive, Shafaad. You know, the ocean has an ability to heal itself, and no matter what you throw at it, you know, it's always cycling. It gets flushed twice a day with a high tide and low tide, Shafaad. So, you know, it's just that we as humans need to get our act together, and all our waste needs to be treated and neutralized before being pumped into the ocean. And I think we've been very slack in that, letting pumps break down, infrastructure break down without a care to repair them. So we really need to get our act together to conserve the environment and to protect the environment, Shafaad.
Hey, I can hear that brother in Umkumasi is telling me, yes, sir, brother, yes. Yeah, you know, can Adam try and get all those things there, yeah, the sewage into the farms. And you see how big the cabbages will grow and how big the cauliflower will grow. You'll get gigantic carrots also, he says. Forget the strawberries. You'll get strawberries as big as pumpkins. Hey, I think the brother is onto something, Adam.
Yes, Shafaad, I think that should be diverted. There's a lot of ways to make use of the waste. But still, Shafaad, it has to be treated. You can't use the raw product onto vegetables that's going to be consumed by humans. And we've had issues, you know, with vegetables contaminated with E. coli before, and it still causes tremendous amount of problems. So it's a matter of treatment, Shafaad. Either you treat it and neutralize it and dispose it in the ocean, or you treat it and make it safe to be used in horticulture and used to as manure and to enhance the growth of plants. But everything has to be done in a scientific manner, Shafaad. You can't just willy-nilly redirect all your pipes into the garden and expect for a miracle, Shafaad.
Yeah, one thing in the farms, you know, they don't have this system of a sewage system, and the people go out in the outskirts and, you know, they do the business and all that. But that's another topic indeed. And I, as you say, you know, we don't know the type of food that we're consuming, and the bacteria levels and the levels of pollution definitely compromising human beings. And then you see lots of fat fish around, you know. I mean, is it something to do with what's going on? And then, you know, people are going around selling this fish. And they said, no, but no, brother, you got this fish. And he said, no, it's a big one, man. It's a big one. But, you know, where did you get it from? Because a lot of fish are being, washed out, and you know, many are dead. How do you, identify that this fish is a diseased fish, or, you know, it's still looking fresh? But how do you identify that, Adam?
Yes, Shafaad, a lot of our estuaries have been polluted to such an extent that we found hundreds of dead fish floating around. And then you would get the opportunists that would collect some of these fish and try and sell them off as fish that they've caught. So my advice, Shafad, is don't buy fish from off the street or from strangers. Go to a recognized fish shop, a seafood dealer who is licensed, and they would ensure that the fish comes from deep sea or from Mozambique or from, you know, from waters that are not polluted, Shafad. These fish shops are not going to be collecting dead fish to pass off as fresh fish. But if you are buying off the street, then that's a very, very risky business, and you're putting your life in danger and your health in danger, Shafad. So I would recommend against that. Just, you know, follow the licensed dealers and buy from recognized seafood dealers, Shafad.
This message on the screen says, how's it, Adam? You know me, Percy. I want to tell you, you're really enjoying the program. You resonate with that guy there. My name is Shama. Hey, Adam, they know you, but they don't know me. Okay. And he says, the shad season, is it closed? And if I'm... I want you to tell the people if they caught catching shad, what is the fine? Some of our chummies are still doing it. Please, Adam, conscientize the people. How do you respond to your chummy there, Adam?
Yes, Shafad. The shad season used to be closed for 3 months every year, but that's been shortened to 2 months. It's the months of October and November. So from the first day of October to the last day of November, it's not allowed. So the season will open again on the 1st of December. You know, if you are caught with shad in the banned season, the fine can go into thousands. If you're on a boat and you've got, like, way over your limit and it's banned season, they can even confiscate the boat, Shafad. So it's definitely not worth it. And then, you know, there are certain subtleties as well, Shafad. A lot of fishermen fish with live bait, and shad is a very prized live bait to use to catch garrick. And there are a lot of garrick around at the moment. But during the banned season, you are not even allowed to catch a shad and pin it up for live bait and fish with it, Shafad. So if you are trying for other live baits like sugar mackerel or carantine, etc., and you invariably hook a shad, your duty is to release it safely back into the ocean, Shafad, not even to use it as bait.
So it's a spawning season for the shad. What other fish are spawning? I mean, every fish has a certain month or certain season where they spawn, Adam.
Yes, Shafad. Throughout the year, you'd find certain fish become prolific along the coast. So that's what makes fishing so exciting on our KZN coast. Unlike inland, you know, when it comes to winter time, you know, it's really freezing cold, and the fish are very slow to bite. So most of the inland fishermen have a really, they choose some other hobby during winter. But yeah, in Durban, we have mild winters. We can still continue fishing throughout our winter. Our summers are quite humid. And we get different species biting, you know, every 2 or 3 months. You know, you can change your target species. Like, as we come towards the summer months now, Shafad, the shore anglers will be targeting flatfish, like stingrays, sand sharks, and various species of sharks that they'd like to target. And then catch, take a photo, and release. And deep sea, you'd find the Dorado coming on the bite, Shafad. At the moment, there's quite a good run on Haledeck salmon. The charter boats are catching salmon virtually every evening that they launch, Shafad. So it's really exciting for us. And scientifically, the Ocean Research Institute has been following populations of fish, and shad in particular is a very easy fish to catch from the shore. And that's why it attracts a lot of beginner fishermen as well. So when the shad are on the bite, you know, you find, we actually call it a bamboo forest, where all these guys are standing with their rods on the shore. And you just have to cast a short cast into the ocean with the right shad trace and bait, and you're hooking into your shad. And because it's easy to catch, it has been exploited over the years. And it's for this reason that they've instituted the ban during the spawning season, to give the fish a chance to breed and to lay the eggs and have them fertilized, and for the species to continue, Shafad. So I think it's important to respect these bans and fish for other species during the ban season.
Now, Adam, I want to take you back, way back, because you're the professori, right? When you looked at those fishermen of yesteryear, you know, the real char fishermen, the charos, you know, they say the charos. Not the maros, but the charos, with that bamboo rod. You know that bamboo rod? What type of reel did they use? They just used a bamboo in the line, but they were proficient, you know, exceptional fishermen. Talk to us about the yesteryear fishermen.
Yes, Shepard. Most of those fishermen using the bamboo rods used a KP reel. KP is Keith Palmer. He's the guy, that a local person that invented this reel. And it's a special art to be able to cast with this reel into the surf, Shepard. If you're fishing from a boat with this reel, it's easy. You just let your line down and the sinker pulls the line off the reel and you just control the reel with your hands so you don't get an overwind. But when you're casting it from the shore, you've got to swing this your sinker out overhead, and as it peels the line from the reel, you know, it's a delicate balance not to get an overwind. And beginners often they call it a big bajia out of the line, and they spend a couple hours trying to untangle that. But the real skilled anglers were able to cast the KP, get their lines out to the back line, and hook some monsters, Shepard. You know, to hook a big fish like a garrick on a KP setup is unbelievable. But these guys used to do it, Shepard. And then you also get the side cast KP for the guys that are not so proficient, or if you want to use a bigger reel with more line capacity, then these guys would actually sometimes even swim a bait out and catch bigger fish, or even cast a huge solid bait from the side cast KP and then turn it facing the normal way to retrieve your line and until you have a good bite, and then you continue fishing, Shepard.
I tell you, the professor, he taught me something new, people. Yeah, the line got tangled. I was a lighty. I should get tangled line. I should just cut it. Yeah, taken by, but he called it a bajia. That other guy said, but why not vade? And the other guy said, hey, man, call it gulgulas. But, yeah, it goes like scrambles, eh? More like a jalebi, Adam.
Another name for it is the bird's nest, Shepard, or if you think about it, it looks a lot like Sutarpani as well, Shepard.
Hey, you're rolling, eh? You're rolling. Your cousin there, he's laughing. You know which one, eh? The doctor cousin of yours. He's listening. Hey, Chef, you and Adam, y'all got me going. But alhamdulillah, you're right. It's more like Sutarpani. That is a very thin line and a different gauge. Have they made the lines now no more to go? Because those days, I think our time when we are lighties, every time I threw into that river mouth there, and hey, I used to give it up. I say, hey, look at this now. I've got a bajia. You taught me something. But I'll call it Sutarpani. Every time Sutarpani, and I go back home. Because it was irritating, Adam. Very irritating.
Yes, Shepard, the fixed spool reels kind of solves that problem. The fixed spool reel would be what we call a coffee grinder. And here you don't need the expertise to be able to cast. It's the reels that have a running spool, like a multiplier, that when you cast, the spool actually spins as it releases the line. But the difference is, Shepard, if you're casting with the multiplier, you're not twisting your line. If you're casting with the coffee grinder, the line comes off sideways off the spool, and you know, you get a lot of twist in the line. So there are pros and cons to these two styles of fishing. And a lot of people consider you more professional if you're using a multiplier reel rather than a copy grinder. But having said that, the copy grinders in recent months have come into their own with reels like the Stella and the Twin Power. They've got amazing strong drags. They've got lift spools so you can get better casting distance. And the biggest change in recent years, Shepard, has been braid, fishing with braid rather than nylon. Braid is thinner and stronger, and it allows you to get cast further out into the ocean, Shepard. So these are the developments that have been made in fishing.
Now, we know, you know, different organizations or different products have institutes where they better the product. And, you know, you could the cell phone technology, you get, you know, by the way, I believe Israel has the technology for cell phones and the high grade and this and that. All happens there. But I want to know about fishing. Do you have a, you know, maybe a scientific school that does research into fishing and, you know, in technology, and then, you know, makes a statement or makes an informed decision, we're going to do this and we're going to do that, and share that information with perhaps, you know, the fishing companies and so forth, and maybe with the people like yourselves. Talk to us about that phenomena, Adam.
Yes, Shepard. For example, if you look at the manufacturing process of nylon, the nylon, it comes from a thick strand, and then it's extruded through a machine to certain tolerances in terms of the diameter of the nylon that's going to be used, you know, as the end product, and it also controls the breaking strain. But for example, if they package, say, a 20-pound nylon, the tolerance could be, the breaking strain could be anything from 19 pounds to 21 pounds. So there is an organization called IGFA, International Game Fishing Association, where lions are actually rated. For example, if it's labeled 20 pound, that means it must break at or below 20 pounds, not above it. So this levels the playing field, Shafad. If you're having a tournament and you are specifying that the anglers will only use 20 pound nylon, then you won't have a situation where some anglers pick up a spool of nylon that's labeled 20 pound, but it breaks at 21 pound. Every single one of them will break at 20 pound or below. So this organization has formulated number of rules related to competition fishing. And I think this is where standards come in play, Shafad, where you need to have standardized equipment and to be able to judge the talent and the skill of anglers. Whereas if you have anglers with various types of tackle that they're using, then each one would have an advantage over the other, Shafad. So that's where it comes in.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And once again, Adam is up to speed. Looking at a message here, and it says, Assalamu alaikum, Adam Kamda. Ready, look forward to your slot on a Sunday. Enjoy you. I want you to conscientize people about the safety factors when you go to the beach and precautions that you should be taking. I was just reading the paper yesterday. There's a young girl that was washed off the rocks and her body was found this morning. I want you to tell the visitors to respect the ocean, because it's not like what it looks like. Below the ocean, there's a lot of currents and so forth. And tell us some of the precautions that we have to take. E. coli or not, I will still be coming to Durbs. Please, Adam, give us your nasiha. Adam, your nasiha, what and what not to do when you come to the Durban or you're going onto the rocks, and what you should be looking out for, Adam.
Yes, Shafad, you started with E. coli, and I think, you know, Durban really needs the tourism, it really needs the visitors. Even right up to Amshlanga, a lot of the hotels have really been affected by people who've changed their plans. But I think follow what's been published officially by Sweeney. If they have tested the water and found it safe to bathe in and to fish in, then go by that and give Durban a chance. From what I can see, things are cleaning up and a lot of bathers are back in the water. In terms of safety, Shafad, you know, you never should take the ocean for granted. Don't fish out of your depth. Fish with people that are more experienced and follow the advice. Especially rock fishing, Shafad, you need to wear proper rock shoes so that you don't slip, because the rocks can be very slippery, covered with moss. Don't fish in unfamiliar areas. Obviously, you've got to follow the guidelines on the shore, which certain areas are demarcated for bathing. You shouldn't be fishing in those areas. But ideally, come onto Facebook and look up pages like Fishing Durban, where you can meet like-minded people. You could fish in a group. There's a safety aspect in terms of crime there, and also a safety aspect in the sense that you're fishing with much more experienced anglers who know the waters, who know the currents, who know what the tides do, you know, in terms of extreme tides, when there's spring tides and the tide is running out and there's a lot of backwash. So, for example, you wouldn't be wanting to wade deep into the water and try and cast as far out as possible when you have these surges in current and these rip currents, Shafad.
Now, I don't know if you were whispering into the tourism Durban, but now suddenly they want to have tourism whales. Yeah, come and check the whales in Durban. Did you whisper to the authorities? Because, I mean, you, Adam, you can just say, come onto my yacht and I'll take you to the whales. But you didn't do that. You told the authorities. Am I correct in my assumptions?
You know, Shafad, maybe they've been listening to your show and getting tips from and ideas from your show, Shafad, because we mentioned the whales many times on the last few shows. And, whale watching and observing these creatures out in the ocean, it's so amazing, Shafad. And I think it's an opportunity that's really underexploited. I think 99% of even Durbanites have not experienced it. And or if you speak to any boater or yachtsman, you know, in the last few weeks especially, it's impossible to go out to sea and come back without seeing at least one or two whales. And on some days, some fishermen would report like about 30 to 40 whale sightings, Shafaat. So it's very seasonal, similar to Hermanus. I think in Hermanus, it's very well developed. They have licensed whale-watching boats that take the public out. They follow very stringent guidelines, you know, to keep a distance from the whales and not to disturb them in the environment. And I haven't really noticed it in past years, but this year specifically, I noticed a lot of whale activity off Durban. But having said that, I browsed through some of my old photos, Shafaat, and I have come across in these months, October, November months, sightings of whales in past years as well. But if this is anything to go by, and if this kind of activity continues in the years ahead, Shafaat, I definitely think that there's an opportunity for tourism to set up whale watching in Durban.
No, absolutely, Adam. And I think credit to you. They are definitely listening to you, and you're on many other platforms. And perhaps maybe they follow Adam very closely. You're legendary with your pictures and so forth. And alhamdulillah, the community work that you do. But, moving on. And, I recall when I was a lighty walking on the shores of the Indian Ocean here in Sapingo Beach, there were glass bottles, you get cut, and then you get into the puddles, and suddenly there were glass there, you'll get cut. But thank Allah, we just heal. I mean, some of the cuts were so deep. I mean, what type of people throw glass into puddles and onto the seashores and just leave it, Adam? Talk to me.
Yes, Shafar, I think that's a byproduct of the people reveling in the evenings and coming down to the beachfront and consuming alcohol, Shafar. So when they're done, then they end up just throwing the bottles around, and it inevitably breaks on the rocks and then becomes a hazard for beachgoers. I think here, again, law enforcement can do a lot more, especially during festive time, to prevent alcohol on the beaches, which is illegal anyway, according to our bylaws. But they just need to enforce it a bit more, show a few examples of the people being arrested, and it will deter them. Last year, I did notice, especially around the Blue Lagoon area, Shafaat, they cordoned off that whole area so there was only one entrance and one exit, and they could monitor it very closely. They examined everyone's boot before they went into that area if they had alcohol. Either it was confiscated or they were turned away. And I actually noticed people turning away themselves, Shafaat, the guys who were guilty and who had alcohol and wanted to go and have their brides with alcohol there. They actually voluntarily turned away. So I think more exercises like this will keep our beaches safer in terms of people being drunk and going into the water, as well as you rightly mentioned, polluting our beaches with broken glass, Shafaat.
Looking at this message, it says, Assalamu alaikum. Adam, I recall when I was a young lad, I used to use the cork and go to the river and do the fishing. It was a cork and the hook. It was so enjoyable. Is the cork still being used nowadays? Hey, Adam, I recall using cork and all that. But that was more for the river and lakes, not for the sea. Adam?
Yes, Shafaad, it's still very widely used. If you look at every shad trace, it has the cork bung, which is what they call it. And the purpose of that, Shafaad, although you're using a cork, you're also using a sinker. So the sinker gives it enough weight so you can cast your bait out into the waves or just beyond the waves. And the sinker takes your whole rig down to the bottom of the ocean. And the cork actually helps to lift the sardine up above the bottom, so your sardine doesn't just end up wallowing in the sand. It floats mid-water, which is where the shad are feeding, and allows the fish to bite. But using the cork on the surface of the water, for example, fishing in an estuary or a river, it's so enjoyable for a youngster because, you can get bored quite easily. But here, if you have this cork floating on the water and your bait just below it, whenever a fish is nibbling, you can actually see the cork moving, and they call it a policeman. He's using the cork as a policeman, and it alerts you that there's a bite. So, it's really exciting manner of fishing where you can anticipate, oh, I'm going to get a strike any minute now, and you can pick up your rod and hold it and get ready to strike. And as soon as you see your cork disappear below the surface, then you strike and you're on and the fight ensues. So it's really an exciting way to get children involved in fishing, take them to an estuary, set up your trace with the cork on the surface. And in modern times, besides using actual cork material, they have polystyrene floats as well, Shafaat. And I think there are even some floats that have lights in them. So if you're fishing in the evening or at night, you can actually see where your float is and if you're getting a bite chapati.
Hey, Adam, you bring it alive, eh? You bring it alive. You brought me up to speed. And I was just thinking about cork is expensive now. I mean, you know, the price of cork, even I think they're doing, you know, when you buy cork, it's maybe priced beyond the layman. But as you said, polystyrene coming through. And will they do away with cork soon, Adam?
I think cork as a, I think it's a type of wood chapat. It's used, you know, in the bottling industry to bottle beverages. And throughout the years, the cork they used for fishing tackle used to be recycled, you know, cork that was in the bottling industry chapat. So it's a natural product, and because you're recycling it and repurposing it, it's actually good for the environment. So I'd be happy if they continue using proper cork rather than moving to synthetics like polystyrene chapati.
Here's a question for you. It's from, what's his name? Okay, little lower, I can't say the name. Yes, it's from Shaheen. Shaheen says, Assalamu alaikum, Adam. Can I buy bloodworms from the pet shop and use it for fishing? Jazakallah khair. Well, how you respond there, Adam?
Yes, Shafar, the bloodworm that they use for feeding tropical fish is quite different from the one that you would collect from an estuary environment, Shafar. The one for the pets are quite tiny and minuscule, and the fish then can feed on that. So it's not really suitable to put on a hook and fish with. But there are other similar products. I've seen a dried, dehydrated bloodworm, which you soak in water for a short while, and it rehydrates, and you can pin that onto your hooks. But it's still very small. It's suitable for catching species like black tails, etc. And that company had acquired the permissions from the environmental agencies to actually sell them. But normal bloodworm from the fresh bloodworm from the estuaries, as I mentioned, is illegal to fish with in KZN.
Okay, you heard that. It's illegal to use them. And yeah, for my aquarium, I used to buy quite a bit of that. But hey, long since I've used a bloodworm. A gigi foy. Yeah, gigi foy. Don't worry. Adam's got a recipe for you. Adam, what do you have for the listeners this morning? Your recipe.
Yes, Shafat. As you know, I love my fish recipes, and the simpler, the better. So I'll explain to the listeners how to do a battered fish. So the ideal fish to use here is cake. Make sure it's clean, it's defrosted, and let it stand to come to room temperature. You can pat them dry with a paper towel. And then you need two bowls, one for the dry mix and one for the wet mix. So the dry mix, you would use some flour and some salt and some chili powder. That's the actual minimum. To this, you can be creative. You can add garlic powder, onion powder, herbs of your choice like oregano or mixed herb, and even maybe some aromat. Give this a good mix and set it aside. And then in another bowl, you crack two eggs and add some milk, and you beat this up, you whisk it until it's nicely combined. Then you take your fish fillets, dip it in the egg mix, and then coat it with the flour. Give it a quick shake to shake off the excess flour, and fry it in medium depth oil, like hot oil, for about 5 minutes on each side, till the inside is nicely cooked and the outside is nice and crispy.
Hi, Adam. You know why they paused there? I can just see a masterpiece that you have made, that crispy, soft inside. With a lot of lovely masala chips. I can enjoy that. And what do I wash that down with? With that lovely
Don't forget to give it a generous squeeze of fresh lemon, Shafat, so you get the nice saltiness from the aromat and then a lovely tang from the fresh lemon juice, Shafat.
Now, see, you're talking, Adam, and you tell them about your dalgos, when you make your dalgos and when you squeeze that lemon. Hey, you must have a nice...
This dish must be eaten hot, so when your guests are at the table, you know, you fry your fish and take it straight to the table. And it makes the best accompaniment for dalgos. Dalgos and fried fish, nothing can beat that, Shafat.
I tell you, Adam and I are on the same page, people, when it comes to the chow. Adam, I tell you, brilliant indeed, as usual. Your parting words this morning?
Yes, Shafat, I'd just love to encourage everyone to come down to the beachfront, enjoy the months ahead. We're coming to our festive season, you know, keep our hotels busy, and keep our charter boats busy at the Durban Marina and Wilson's Wharf. And stay safe and come enjoy Durban. Salams to you and the listeners.
Wa alaikum salam, Adam. And definitely when they're coming to Durban, they'll be looking for you. Get your pen out. Get your pen out, Adam, and start autographing. Let's go.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.